Nechemiah in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yutes mentions specific names and quite specific detail about how the wall was strengthened and fortified as they're attempting to rebuild Yerushalayim. They're facing great opposition from people called Tsarei Yehuda, who we need to remind ourselves, especially at this time of year, probably had a man who was called Tsorer HaYehudim at their head. Haman was probably front and center of this group that wanted to make them stop, right? One of the hidden messages of Esther is that Haman wasn't just interested in getting rid of this one hated Jew in Shushan named Mordechai. His interest was in stopping the national aspirations of the Jewish people altogether. Right? Okay, he's not mentioned in any of these other books, although Ahasuerus is, as we learned when we did Ezra. Okay, Ahasuerus was the one who put an end to this rebuilding project earlier in Sefer Ezra. So now we have reference to specific names. There's a Kohen Gadol named Eliashiv, a Kohen HaGadol. This means that this is some years after... About to read Pasuk Chaf Bet 22. It mentions the role played by Kohanim. Acharav hechaziku haKohanim anshei haKikar. The Kohanim were also very much involved in this effort. Notice that something we already know from the end of Sefer Ezra is that Bedafka Leviim were not involved in this effort. Right? Shevet Levi. Right? If you're from Shevet Levi, you're either a Kohen or a Levi. Right? When we left Egypt, there were 22,273 Leviim and 3 Kohanim. Right? 22,273 Leviim and 3 Kohanim. There were 5 Kohanim, 2 of them died. Right. So that number is almost exactly flipped here in Nehemiah. There are many Kohanim, but no Leviim.
And now as well.
And even continuing to now. And I just, by anecdote, whenever you see duchening, whether in Israel, but certainly in Chutz Laaretz, there are always more Kohanim having their hands washed than Leviim washing their hands. Okay, so that is just, this corroborates the issue that something happened, something cataclysmic happened between the Kohanim and Leviim. And we discussed this already at the end of Ezra, because the Leviim didn't show up. And I understand why. The Leviim were behaving like Korach. They said, what should we bother with this temple? All the glory goes to the Kohanim. And what do? We're watchmen, and we sing, and we blow trumpets, and play musical instruments. We're the Lam Natseach, we sing Tehillim, we stand on the steps. And, you know, Zayecha, that you get to work in such a holy place, you know. It's a steady job. And you get tithes that are more than the truma that the Kohen gets. Right? Your tithes are 10%. Right?
How much more is that the Kohen?
Kohen gets, it's not described by the Torah. The rabbis say you should give them 2%. 2%.
So
10%
goes to the
Levi. 10% goes to the
Levi. Right, or is that
2 of the Levi, after he gets his 10%, has to tithe that to the Kohen. That's true. So the Levi is basically getting 9 parts. The Kohen is getting 3 parts. But the Kohen, since there are so many fewer of them, at least at the time of the Torah, we're basically getting a lot more.
They didn't have,
right?
To,
because there's so many. Everyone has to give truma. Right, everyone has to give truma. You can choose your Kohen. You can choose your Levi. Right?
Who are you going to give it to?
Right, but there are so many Leviim, so, you know, then not everyone's. It's not going to
be. So one Kohen could be glomming all the.
If you know. One thing, they're not allowed.
Has such wonderful personality.
They're not allowed to.
Busy kissing everybody's.
Right, but they're not allowed to make a pitch for it.
No,
they just have
well,
to.
Well, perhaps we get more pleasant.
Yeah, right.
So
they have to just deserve it. They can't stand at the granaries and say, you know, here I'm here. You know. Okay, be it as it may, the Gemara at the end of Maseches Demai, at the end of Maseches Sota, the Gemara says that because the Leviim behaved in such a reprehensible manner when the Second Temple was being built, that Ezra made a takana. That the Maaser Rishon, this 10% that the Leviim used to get, are now going to the Kohanim. So there are two practical reasons for this. One is that there is so few Leviim to go around, So if everyone in Israel is giving 10% to those few Levim, what do you have to make them fabulously wealthy for? Right? There are many, many more Kohanim. So let the Kohanim have the 10%. Right? How could Ezra so drastically change what the Torah says about tithing? The answer is technical. When a Kohen gets his tithe, that tithe is holy. Right. The Kohen must eat it in a state of ritual purity, and there are strict punishments for a non-Kohen eating it, or if the Kohen eats it when he's not in a state of such purity. That applies to Truman, that applies to Challah. The part you pull off and you give to the Kohen when you're baking bread. We don't do any of this today because we don't have Kohanim who are Muchzokim from Aaron,
but we don't have the basic Mikdash.
Right, so then we don't do these stuff. But even in the time of the Temple, though, the Levite tithe, the 10% that you give the Levite, has no holiness whatsoever. And I'm saying there's no, it's regular food. You can do it every once, you can throw it out if you want. It is no holiness. But Truma has a profound holiness. You can't waste it, you can't ruin it, it has to be eaten in a state of purity. So that is why Ezra had the right to take the property of the Levium and say now it belongs to the Kohanim. Okay, so this is a new Kohen Gadol. His name is Eliashiv. Rabbi Eliashiv, that you know, is the same name. Acharav hechzik meremos ben Uriah ben Akots mita shenis bipesach beis al Yoshev atachlis beis al Yoshev. V'acharav hechziku hakohanim anshei hakikar. It just says that we have some quite strange names actually here, and the Kohanim were very much involved in this process, but not Levim dafka. Okay, Kohanim, but not Levim. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Chav Gimel, 23. אחרוב יחזיק בנימין וחשוב נגד ביסום אחרוב יחזיק עזריה ומעשיה ונענוניה אצל ביסו. So these were people who lived in these areas. They of course were very interested in a strong wall around Yerushalayim. It meant protection for them. Okay? Remember, a strong wall means that you feel weak. Right? They certainly felt weak. They knew they were being threatened and when you have to build something holding your hand on one weapon, of course you feel weak. Right? So they needed this chizuk, and these are the people who joined one after the other. Right? You see each pasuk, Acharav Hechzik, this person, you see some very interesting names. Binui ben Chenadad. Chenadad. What a strange name. Like Eldad made the okay, alright, these are you go all the way out to verse 32. It just gives you the names of the people who were involved in the rebuilding of the wall. Right? You got looks like a lot of people, but you know, comparably speaking to other worldwide projects that were meant to last a long, long time, this is a modest amount of people. Okay. And it says that there were Tzorfim and Rochlim who were involved in this process. Tzorfim and Rochlim. Right? Rochlim are peddlers. Right? Lotelech Rochil va'amecha are a peddler of Lashon Hara. Right? Rochilus comes from that. Right? Okay. Tzorfim are I'm just finishing verse 32. I skipped all the names. There's no reason to just keep reading names. Alright. Okay, so.
This is a good baby book.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
Are these Hebrew names?
Apparently. You see them? You see how strange they are?
Yeah, but they all have Hebrew Jewish roots. Shlina, Bracha, Mishkan, Kulsta.
Okay. So Rochlim are peddlers, and Tsarfim are smiths, people who smelt things together and to make like spoons or handles, cups and things. Okay. All right, so these people were needed to purchase necessary items for the builders or to help just for necessary items for the temple itself. Okay, let's get back to those enemies. When Sanballat, the bad guy that we learned about before, wanted to stop him from building. When Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, Vayicharlo, he got angry. Vayichas harbe, and he became exceedingly enraged. Okay, Vayicharlo, Vayichas harbe. What's the difference between kas and chora? Right? Chora is from the lashon to become, to get hot and to, you know. Chora af Hashem. Okay, chora is the emotional part. Kas is what drives you to do something. Vayaleg al Yehudim. Vayaleg is he ridiculed the Jews. Now it's clear to Sanballat is a Shomroni. He's a man from the north of Israel who was from the people brought in by Sancheriv to live in the north, so that the land doesn't remain desolate. Remember what Sancheriv used to do when he conquered people? Not just the Jews. He mixed up populations. He would take people from here, 1,000 people from this place, and transfer them 5,000 miles away, and bring people from there, and bring them back. And this way, they did not have any allegiance to their place. They just, let me be ruled by whoever's ruling. It doesn't matter to me. It's not my homeland. So you hope to overextend his borders that way and not have to worry about an insurrection. Okay, so when Nehemiah with his ramshackle group of people who are trying to build the wall, and here comes this big shot, this Sanballat, who's mocking them. He says, what do you have? What are these weaklings, these amelolim, amela means these nebuch, nebush umlal. It's like Nebush, look, whatever. You're not doing anything. Hezbulahem, Hezbachu, Yechalubayam, Achiyu, Sivanim. Can you make those bones live? It sounds like stones. Yecheskel said, can you make the bones live? He's saying, so if you have a trivia question, who said, shall these bones live? And who said, shall these stones live? All right, you're going to make these stones live again? You're going to make the dust that was charred to the ground from those stones, shall they rise again? You think you can possibly ever offer a sacrifice in this place? Right? Well, these are famous last words because the Shomronim, they never rebuilt their temple. Right? Shomronim had a temple in Har Grizim. Right? The temple doesn't exist anymore, but their followers continue to offer sacrifices there. It's quite a media event when they do it on Erev Pesach. No, you ever see it?
Today?
Today, every year. They've been doing it for hundreds of years. They did it last year. Now it gets TV coverage in Israel. Okay. See it. On the day before Pesach, this year, look for some Israeli news. And you'll see the Shomronim, they're offering the goat or a sheep. Right? And they offer and they eat it that night, roasted. As a Korban Pesach.
Back in the day, there were some Chilonim who were talking about being Canaanim instead of Yehudim. Hmm. They were. Remember this thing? What's going on?
I thought that the Palestinians were saying that.
No. There were the Jews who were calling themselves not Plishtim, but Canaanim.
That's interesting.
And so this could be why the press covers the secular press like.
Is this near Shiva?
It's interesting. But the Shomronim definitely do not say that. They say that they're Jews. They're following Torah.
It's like the Muslims, they say what to say. They have the truth.
But they don't have a Messiah. They don't want it. It's not Neil Shilo. That's not Shilo, right?
No. No, but Shilo is in Midbar Yehuda, not in Midbar Shammah. Okay. Shilo is actually in the land of Ephraim, I should say. It's a little north of Yehuda. Land of Ephraim. So whether you can call Ephraim, maybe Ephraim is part of the Shomron. Yeah. Okay, when you speak today of the... I don't like to call the West Bank the way. I think that's political. It's the West Bank of Jordan. This is Yehuda and Shomron. There's a biblical name to that place.
But those bacon men would call it.
You would never call it, yeah. Why should we? And whenever I call Yehuda and Shomron, he's a right winger. I'm calling it what the Bible calls it. Why should we give in to? It's not even 1948 propaganda. It's post-67 propaganda.
People shouldn't call Palestinians.
Right. If you go back to
every Israel is the West Bank.
If you go back to any news outlet in 1967 after the Six-Day War, you know what word you're not going to find? Not in Time magazine, not in Newsweek, not in any publication.
Palestinians.
The word Palestinians.
Except for the Jews who were there before the man.
So Jews call them. Jews are the Palestinians. You're not fun. The word doesn't exist. Try to Google the word and see. Is anyone using that terminology in 1950? When Jordan and Egypt administered those areas?
No.
No one asked for a state. No one said that these people have legitimate claim to lands. Right? Why didn't the Egyptians? The Egyptians are Arabs. Why didn't they make a state for them? Or Jordan, for that matter?
They made it rather difficult for people living
absolutely
there.
And I knew people who lived in those areas. And I remember speaking to them in the 70s. They said that when Israel came in, they gave us plumbing, they gave us universities. Look at the statistics. Life expectancy rose dramatically. Literacy rates rose dramatically. Comfort rose dramatically. But the Arab world likes to keep them in squalor. And then those wretched camps in order to have a chip against Israel. And it's worked. It's worked wonderfully. It's worked with the world. It's worked with, now it's worked with the current government. And it's worked with a large swatch of Israeli population. Look how well it worked. Why shouldn't you do what works? Right? Golda Meir said it. They're Palestinian refugees, but there's no such thing as a Palestinian people. No, the Palestinian people are the Jews.
And there's no talk about the Sephardim who were pushed out of Egypt and the
many more. Iraq, Egypt, Tunisia, Algeria, sure. I know their descendants. Of course, we had to leave everything behind. And look,
Well, there were riots in Baghdad, and the Jews had to run for their lives. There were no riots in Israel. Why Fagin blew up the British, a couple of officers?
Because they were killing Jewish boys for the crime of carrying a gun to defend themselves.
Where then on the Arabs?
Yeah. So at least what I find amazing is that when you mention these things, Jewish people call you an enemy of peace. Right? I just said this innocently at a forum and the Jewish Week reported it as warmongering. You know, it's just, no one here is old enough to remember, but the Balfour Declaration had all of Israel and all of current Jordan as the Jewish homeland, right? And in 1923, they cut off 78% of that and gave it to the Hashemite king, and they called it Jordan. But he wanted to call it Palestine, and Winston Churchill wouldn't let him. He said, you can't call it Palestine. Palestine is the Jewish homeland.
So who else meets this besides the Jewish people?
I don't know. Most Jews don't. You know, and then, the Jews are behind it. It's because of such a vigorous, Women in Black, and then all these, this was such a vigorous PR from the Jews. J Street, and Peace Now, and all that camp. It's amazing. There are already 21 Arab states in the world. Make another one that doesn't acknowledge Israel's right to exist, and it's a hotbed of terrorism. You seems another one like this.
Not only that, but the Hashemite kingdom, whatever, from Saudi Arabia, so the Brits wanted to benefit them from the Arab revolt against the Turks so that they could take over the land. So they gave them that. They're not even native to the area. Well, that's right, he was assassinated anyway, but it's not the uproar.
All right. Look, we can all, but some of the history just repeats itself. Okay, so let's continue, please. V'tovi yaha Amoni. The Ammonites really caused great harm to us at this time. Do you remember who it was that led the revolt to kill Gedaliah? It was also an Ammonites. Right. What dog do they have in this race? Right. Well, the Moabites, we don't see at this time anymore. But Ammonites continue to be in the middle of such havoc in this part of our history. If Gedaliah, I tell you this, if Gedaliah had not been killed, right, if we have a fast for him, right, after Rosh Hashanah, Tzom Gedaliah, right? If Gedaliah had not been killed, a sizable Jewish community would have remained in Israel throughout the exile, and many more Jews would have returned to Israel than the paltry 42,360 we read about in Ezra. And if many, many more Jews had returned, the history again, as it repeats itself, might have been very different had between 1917 and 1923, before there was any white paper, any restriction on immigration, had 2 million Jews gotten up from all over the world. But the Jews who were very secular, the communists, weren't interested in Israel. And the Jews who were very religious certainly weren't interested in Israel. They were busy being against Israel, the state of Israel. And furthermore, the reform movement was violently against the idea of a Jewish state. Totally went against their idea of a family of man and they considered it xenophobic. Look at the writings. That changed, admittedly, with World War II. The reform movement began to support Israel. But originally, they were horribly against the state of Israel.
But Stephen Weiss never was really very helpful.
But it turned to support for the state of Israel after. So that's there you have it again. It's like the Moroccan. We can't go there. Okay, but that's what's happening here. Here it's Tobiah Hamoni Etzlo. Look at this trash talk. Tovia, this Ammonite, says, yeah, even if a fox would jump up, the rocks would fall down. In other words, it's the rocks, the stone wall is so flimsy, even a fox can take it down. Right? They can take down the stones that they build. Shema Elokeinu ki hayinu buza. Please, God, listen to this. We are a mockery. We are derided. We are a derision. V'hashev cherpasam el rosham utnei levizav eretz shivya. Return the derision upon the heads of those who deride us. V'al techas alav onam b'chatosam el fanecha al timoche ki yichisu l'neged bonim. And even through all of this derision and through all of their call for to put an end to this, somehow after Ahasuerus stopped it and Artaxasta allowed it to continue, somehow we managed to do it. Their hearts were in it, and if your heart is in it, you will overcome stumbling blocks. You may even turn them into stepping stones. So Vayika Shir Shama Sanbalat Vitovia, look at the next word. Vaha Arvim, the Arabs. Right? Vahamonim, Vashtodim. Ashtodim are like Philistines. Right? And all these people heard Ki Osar Ucha Lchamos Yushlaim, Ki Khilu Aputim Lisotem. When they heard that, even with all their jeers and all their taunts, and all their calls to the Persian kings of us being a fifth column, and all of their calls to put an end, somehow, amazingly, we started to succeed. We started to stop up those gaps in the wall. They got even angrier.
V'yikshru chulam yachdav,
and they all, v'yikshru is to rebel, because when you make a rebellion, you have to make a kesher. The kesher may not be so public. You have to make it a quiet kesher, right? Okay, the word for rebellion is like a knot. The word for a kesher describes the way that rebellions have to be initiated. In order to fight against Yerushalayim, but it's so slow, to'ah. Mazela, so slow, to'ah. So can you, there's a very famous word that's similar to this. It's interesting because it should have a resh in it. To'ah means something ruinous, something broken. The word truah, resh ayin ayin, means a broken, a dilapidated building. That seems to be what this is trying to say. To make it uninhabitable. And
right, the word to wander, is that a bit tough? It has nothing to do with this.
It is. It could be. Then the resh certainly isn't part of it. Ve'nispalel al arkeinu ve'namid mishmar aleihem yomam v'layla mipneihem. We pray to God and we set up guard duty. Guard against their sabotage, because if we would just leave the gates unguarded at night, they'll come in and knock them down in the morning, overnight. Okay. Sanballat and friends would sabotage our work. So we had to have workers by day and guards by night. Remember Yehuda. Koshal koach hasabol ve'afar harbei, v'anachn lo nuchal livnos b'choma. Who's this Yehuda? Your English does a good job of translating.
The men of Yehuda.
The men of Yehuda. Shevet Yehuda. Not a man named Yehuda.
Oh.
Like Vayomi Mitzrayim, Anusami Pnei Israel.
So the tribe of Yehuda.
Egypt said, let us try to escape this. There's no... Egypt was indeed the name of a person early on in Bereishis, but it doesn't mean Egypt said. It means the Egyptians said. So to hear... The people of Yehuda said, we can't put up with this anymore. We have stumbled. Right? We have no strength left in us. Sabol is from the notion of lisbol. Lamana no sam, besiv lo sam. Remember?
And today's sabol is the porter.
Oh, you really? Okay, yeah. Savlanut means patience, because you have to bear what you feel in order to have patience. We are far away, just to carry all the dust and all the dirt from one place to another to make cement or whatever, you know, just to carry all this earth. It's too much for us. It's not too much for us in general, it's just too much that we're doing it all for nothing, because it's all being sabotaged. You don't mind putting in the effort as long as you see some result. Remember we say in the Dominion, Lo nigal arik, lo neled la behala. I don't mind niga, but I don't want it to be larik. Okay. So now this is, we're about to read something I described earlier today. Nehemiah is trying to get them not to give in, because not only will your behavior not lead to us finishing this wall, but your behavior will make them say they're right, make them victorious.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let that happen. What was it that convinced God when Moshe said, God, you can't destroy them from the Egel, because if you do, the Egyptians won't say that they were destroyed because they defied their God. They'll say they were destroyed because they defied our God. Why should you give the Egyptians the chance to say that you took them out by Ra? Remember, the Egyptians had a sun god named Ra. You took them out into the desert, Ra will destroy them. Turn them into blood in the desert.
That's good.
So this is a good argument to make. And God, listen, you know, be far from me to tell you what to do. But, you know, if this is done, you know, they give them the opportunity to say they were right. And this is what Nehemiah is telling the people who want to be lazy and just put down their shovels. Is you're going to give them the satisfaction of saying that they got, they achieved
their goals.
Their goals. Right. Our enemies, right? The enemies, they said of us that we're not going to ever get any satisfaction from what we're doing. We're not going to see any production from what we're doing, right? All right, so we can't let this succeed. We can't let them succeed. V'yikasher bo ha'yehudim ha'yoshvim etzlam v'emru lanu eser pamim mikol ha'makom aser sh'toshuv olenu. So there were some Jews who lived in their midst. Of course, Jews remained a few, pocket here, a pocket there, and even survived the purge of the 10 tribes, right? Okay. They told us 10 times... that wherever we go, they'll come after us. You should give in to them. So what should we do? Should we give in or not? V'amid mitachti os l'makom me'acharei ha'choma v'tzichichim v'amid es ha'om l'mishpachos l'chavoseihem v'amacheihem v'kashososeihem. Well, Nehemiah is no slouch. He's not afraid. His response to them was to arm his people. Okay? He armed them with all of the best known materials at the time. Swords. A ramach is a spear. Gosh, the same are the arrows, bows and arrows. In other words, they didn't back down. I fortified them. Said, don't be frightened of them. We have one thing that they don't have. Hashem HaGadol V'Hanara. What about HaGibor V'Hanara? HaGadol HaGibor V'Hanara. Remember we did this one? You saw the pasuk that had HaGadol V'HaGibor, but not Nora. Maybe you have Ayin Nora, Usa, remember? Right? So, Moshe saw God as Okel HaGadol HaGibor V'Hanara. But other prophets are missing one of those words. That's the Matthias, they're psukim, where they're missing one of those words. So, the answer is that God does not appear to be such a great Gibor right now. So, Nehemiah does not put that. Like it or not, a God appears as powerful as the people with whom he is associated. The Aztecs, when they were being wiped out by Cortez's Spaniards, was feverishly slaughtering babies to his God, thinking that would strengthen him and make them defeat the Spaniards. There are those who describe it. It's just one after the other. And then when they ran out of babies, they started slaughtering some people. And it was crazy. That's what they thought. They were living so hundreds of years, having their rule of the land. No one defeated the Aztecs except when the Spaniards came. And for hundreds of years, they felt, okay, it's all the feeding of our God. That strengthens them to strengthen us. And they continue to do so. Right? And they just thought that they're able to conquer us because they're serving a God that's much more powerful than ours right now. So we have to strengthen our God within the way we know. Amazing. Right? So,
where did thou shalt not kill come into this? 7 Noahide laws. Did they get lost?
Yeah. Well, they might think that even if a law like that is God-given,
Right.
By their God who doesn't want us to kill. That's not to kill each other, but we're allowed to kill for him. That's the, you know, their gods weren't teaching them morality. Their gods weren't moral themselves. When you read about the, you know, what they write about what their gods do, and they're proud of it. And our god steals the fleece of another god, or outsmarts this god, and goes down to earth and steals a particularly beautiful human or two, and create a demigod with them or something like that. So, the gods are quite immoral themselves.
What happens is there a distinction between killing a fellow Jew or a non-Jew in terms of penalty? Lying in wait with warning, etc.?
This is a complicated issue in Parshas Mishpatim, and the Torah says don't kill, so it's don't kill, don't steal, it's Pashut. It's good, right? And it means not anybody, not anything, anybody. Vayikasher Shemu, Pasuk 9. Test. Vayikasher Shemu Rabbeinu Ki Nodala Nu Vayofer Elohim Esatz of Sam Vanoshev Kulanu El Hachoma Ish El Malachto. When our enemies heard that we got wind of what they were doing, and that God nonetheless discounted their plan and made us successful, right? We successfully built this wall, right? So we built the wall, and they went back to their workings. They built the wall quickly. Why should it take more than a week or so? V'imin ha'yom ahu chatzin ha'arai osim ba'malacha v'chatzin ha'chazikim ha'arachim ha'meginim ha'kshutosos ha'shiryonim v'ha'sorim acharei kol beis Yehuda. This is the famous pasuk I spoke with you before. Half the people were drafted to build, and half the people were drafted to guard. It's such a shame that that's how we have to build. Look, imagine what the Middle East would look like today if there was no anti-Israel policy. Imagine the flourishing societies with happy populaces.
Well, they'd be killing each other, just like they're doing in Syria. What's that to do with Israel?
Yeah, no, that's
Maybe we can help them prosper. That's all.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, there have been some major conflagrations in the Middle East in the last 20, 30 years. Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Iraq, and many
war for the Israel.
None involving Israel. Yes.
What's the purpose of the existence of these people who are like on a lower or a much lower level, like morally, intellectually, and socially, economically, like politically? You know?
Yeah, Hashem created us all in His image, and we all have the challenge to live up to that image, we're going to say. To help others to live up to it. Okay, so half the people had to do battle, half the people had to build. Abonim b'choma v'anusim b'sevala omshim, omsim b'achas yado omsim b'malacha, v'achas machazekes ha'sholach. This is the most famous pasuk in the book. There are statues in Israel with this name, with this pasuk on it. I saw a poster with this pasuk.
Which
it
one?
Says, it's pasuk
11.
The builders at the wall themselves had to carry a weapon with one hand. The one hand they did involved with the sevel omsim, they were involved with heavy lifting. B'chas yado o sevel malacha, b'chas machazekes ha'sholach. Okay. Sholach is like a weapon. Okay, Babonim Isharbo Asurim Almosno Babonim Patsukeh Bashofar Atzli. People would just build just like that. Half their speed, because they can only use one hand. And there was always a person right near me, says Nehemiah, who was had a shofar in his hand. So the shofar directed people with what they do. One blast means start, two blasts means take a rest, one blast means go back to work, two blasts means go home, three blasts means go home, or something like that. And certain blasts mean there's danger coming up ahead. And so they had a system. Okay.
Okay.
They say we're working very far across the wall. What does that mean? That we're too far to express one to the next guy that there's a danger coming up. That's how you keep telling the next like with flags, one to the other. Right? If anyone can hear the shofar blowing, that's where you gather. God will always fight for us. This is also an important pasuk regarding a particular halacha. It says, we all did the work, half of us holding on to weapons from Alos HaShachar, from this time of dawn, Atzeisu Kochavim. So you see this, according to the Magen Avraham, this is the definition of the day, from dawn until the stars. According to the Vilna Gaon, the definition of the day is sunrise to sunset. The halachic definition of the day. Right? What we call between sunset and the stars, we call Bina Shmashos, different aspects of Bina Shmashos. We don't always paskin like one over the other. Right? I've said usually if a baby is born after sunset, but before the stars come out, we usually push him off, he's considered born the next day. Right? If a baby is born after, like right after sunset on a Friday, when do you do bris?
Sunday.
You can't do it Friday in case his birthday is really Shabbos. You can't do the bris on Shabbos just in case his bris is really Friday, and you're not allowed to do bris on Shabbos unless it's exactly the 8th day.
And that was my only non-cesarean, and I could have done it on time except for that.
Really? So you made it, but that was what happened to you, a boy? So.
No, I'm saying he was the only one who was not a cesarean.
Uh-huh.
So theoretically it could have been on the right day, the other one.
So the same thing was with my mother, you just said about what time of the day was it that she was having. So was it Ben Arbaim, Ben Ashmashos, Etzesa, the Shia Sachama, Etzesa Kochavim? I read it something from Yeshiva.
Not only have it right, you have it in the right language. Okay, so he says that we worked from dawn until the stars. Gamba Isai Amarti La'am. Ishvina Roy Alina Besochi Rishalayim Vayulanu Halayla Mishmar Vayovalach. Said, don't go home to your homes. Until we finish this project, you sleep where you're working. And when you wake up, you're ready to write to go back to work. I don't know if they had what night clothing. Vein aniva achayun arai v'anshia mishmar shecharai. Ein anachnu hoshtim v'godeinu ish shil chol hamayim. We wouldn't even remove our clothes to spend the night asleep. We just woke up in the morning and went right back to work because it was such a davar nechutz. Right? Ish shil chol hamayim. We didn't even launder our clothes to send it to water. Okay, the review of this book, this chapter, is the plot to fight against the Jews who were rebuilding the wall and they're arming themselves to protect the walls. Right? Now, chapter 5, which we're going to do next week, is really an extraordinary parak for this time in history, for Ezra Nehemiah. Because usually we have not been talking so much about one of the most common aspects of the prophets, which is social disorder, inequality. People are not allowed to rise from their
status,
their status, and the people who are stuck in this in slavery and the like. So that's the stuff of Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Amos, Micha, Hosea, right? All these prophets who spoke against social disorder. But Nehemiah has really been mostly a political book about the return. Haggai's Chaim Malachi is much the same. If they do complain about the religious aspects of the Jews' lives, it's more ben adam l'makom. And here, between man and God, here Nehemiah brings back the complaint of the earlier prophets of the economic inequity. All right, we'll talk about that in Mitzvah Shem next week, chapter 5.